I'm here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the deepest lore. We have a slightly different show this week because I've had to take a make a last minute change to our regular scheduled programming in order for us to concentrate on something that could be historic or it could just be a moment of comedy. And we're hopefully over the course of the next 90 minutes, 2 hours, we're going to figure out basically we're going to figure out if Sydney Powell is a moronic LARPer or if she's for real. Is the Kraken a damp squid or is the Kraken something that will potentially go down in American history. We will be normal Deepest Lore will be back next week when my Unpopular Opinions co-host John D will be joining me to talk about the Muppets. this was too important not to cover today, or potentially too important not to cover. If you're interested in the beverage of choice, I am drinking Nescafe Gold. Of course, what else for the deepest lore? You can drink tea or weak lemon drink or Pepsi Max. It's really up to you what you drink. But Nescafe Gold for me, smooth. As people are trickling in, I will just mention a couple of things. In fact, there's a couple of little bits of preamble I want to give before getting into reviewing the Kraken. Okay. The first thing I want to mention is that there was a little bit of news that a lot of people may have missed. Okay. May have missed, okay. And that is let me just share my screen here, which is that back in March of this year, an act was passed called the Presidential Transition Enhancement Act of 2019, okay, which basically amended an existing act for how the presidential transition is dealt with, right? Now, bear in mind, this was filed back in March, and it states, this is the only really relevant bit. It's got a few other bits of it there, but it just states this: prohibit a transition team member with conflict of interest similar to those applicable to federal employees under Section 2635.402A and Section 2635.502A of Title 5 Code of Federal Regulations related to current or former employment affiliations, clients, or investments from working on particular matters involving specific parties that affect the interests of such member. And three, address how the covered eligible candidate will address his or her own conflicts of interest during a presidential term if covered eligible candidate becomes president-elect. Now, bearing in mind that this went in back in March, okay, before anybody had heard anything about a laptop or Joe Biden's son or anything like this, this was entered into the Senate and it was passed in the Senate. Who introduced the act? Okay, it's an official piece of legislation, and it was introduced by Senator Johnson, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. The reason that this is important is because Ron Johnson is not just any old Republican. He is a staunch supporter of Donald Trump. He has been 100% on board with the current claims. According to Wikipedia, they are baseless claims, of course. I just find it interesting that this Senator Johnson introduce that extra piece of legislation related to the presidential transition back in March. Okay. And the reason why this is important is because a few days ago, so last week, the same senator, Senator Johnson, basically put this in. He said he filed something called the, so he sits on the Committee of Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, and he basically put into the official documentation stuff around the laptop and Biden's interests in Ukraine and all of this sort of stuff. You can go on the government on the relevant websites to read all of this. But you know, there are people who like to talk about trusting plans and so on and so forth. And if I was to, even before we get to the Kraken, get these couple of bits of information, put it together with the executive order that Trump signed in 2018, and the fact that he's fired all the military generals and replaced them with, replaced them, and made key changes in intelligence and in the Pentagon, it's not actually in the realms of fantasy that this Homeland Security Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs is gearing up for. I mean, this sounds insane, but you just read what they put in back in March and what they've put in here. It's not out of the realms of possibility that we could see Biden arrested. And I'm not even joking here. They have given themselves the power to and this is interesting because a lot of people are like, well, why did Trump release the transition funds? Okay, so thereby kind of officially making Biden, president elect legally. That is official, like legally now he becomes the president elect. And this is kind of interesting because now Biden has to declare any conflicts of interest, and if he doesn't declare it, this Senator Johnson is kind of waiting in the wings. Interesting little hidden development that literally nobody talks about at all, that I have seen. So that's just something I wanted to share with you before we get going. It could be nothing. I mean, you could look back on this in 3 months' time and you were like, all of that was rubbish. But it's just something to be aware of that nobody is talking about at all. That I have seen. Okay, so anyway, let us continue. This is the sort of thing. Somebody's saying, well, he won't be arrested. I'm just saying that they have given themselves the legal power to do it. They have literally given themselves the power to do it, and Trump has removed all of the people who would block such moves in key positions in intelligence and defense and in the Pentagon. Like, he's literally done that, and I wouldn't be surprised in the next week or so to see the narrative in the media and among leftists and Democrats of, well, Trump is trying a coup, right? Talk of coup will become more prevalent. And I'm just saying that if you're looking at the powers that Trump has given himself and his administration, he's given himself an interesting power there. The other interesting power that he gave himself through the executive order signed in 2018 was that if they can prove there is a foreign interest in all of this, note foreign interest in all of this, that executive order basically gives him the power to freeze and seize assets of any company or any entity that either covered it up or colluded with them, which would basically be all of the media at this point. So I'm just saying, on paper, at least in theory, at least, he's given himself the power to do it. I'm not saying he's going to do it. I'm just saying it's interesting that these bits of legislation went in when they did, and that they weren't opposed, and that they kind of got through under the radar and nobody's talking about them. Okay, that's something that I will that I just thought I'd make people aware of. The other thing that I'll mention very quickly is that it is Black Friday tomorrow, and it's been Black Friday week all week. And my economics course, of course, Foundations of Economics, I made a select few places available for £100 discount if you put in the code Black Friday 2, and they sold out in seconds on Monday. I released a few more on Unpopular Opinions on Tuesday. They all sold out very quickly as well. So in the same spirit, I have released five more today, and they'll still be available tomorrow. I think they run out on Saturday. So if you're interested, if you were one of those, because a lot of people have said, "Oh, damn, I missed it," type thing. So I've opened up five more today, and then Last Chance Saloon, and I really mean Last Chance Saloon, will be tomorrow night on Cigar Stream, where I'm planning to do a kind of meditation on the nature of revolution and a full length review, a full length reply to Morgoth. That's what's happening tomorrow. Anyway, I am not throwing in a free PS5 with the deal, but I am very close to completing the second course on academic agency, Foundations of Writing. Almost all the materials are done for this now. I just have to actually kind of make it and make it go live and so on. Expect that maybe towards the end of next week, and that will be as the launch price for this will be £150, because it's it's a broader course for it's less kind of it's a more broad skills-based course than the economics one. But from what I've seen, a lot of people need to take Foundations of Writing, including Sidney Powell, as it turns out. So yeah, the code is Black Friday 2. Black Friday 2. That will get you the discount. And like I say, I mean, I'm not just saying it as a thing, be quick, because they literally have been selling out in like 3 minutes, 5 minutes. They've all been going. So all right, with all of that said, let us continue with now reviewing the Sidney Powell lawsuit. Now, I spent quite a lot of time trying to actually verify. I spent a lot of time trying to verify whether this was legit, okay? And one of the reasons that I spent a lot of time trying to figure out if it was legit is because the I'll just share my screen to show you what I'm talking about here. Hopefully you can all see this. If you have a look, this Georgia case here, which was filed under the name of CJ Pearson, who's that young, I think he's like an 18-year-old black Republican who's actually one of the official GOP electors for Georgia. Kind of interesting that he is one of the named kind of plaintiffs on here. But if you have a look up in the URL, the link isn't from the Georgia, it's not from the Georgia legal, like the case filings have to go up, and they go up on the official kind of Georgia government website. And the reason we know this is because if you've been following the Lynn Wood case, it's filed, it's got a case number, and then it's got the main complaint, and then there are all these bits of like exhibits, like exhibit one, exhibit two, and so on and so forth, and they're all listed there, and it's all official and stamped. I cannot find that for this case. Now, some people are saying it's because it's Thanksgiving and this is just a draft, okay? But the fact that it's linking to this website and not to the official one, the fact it doesn't have a case number is giving me pause, basically, right? The Michigan case, meanwhile, I'll just open that up here. Now that also doesn't have a case number, but it does have this blue stuff at the top here, which is the same as the Linwood one and the other cases that we've seen. So the Michigan one looks more legit. And also the Michigan one has got all the bits, all the exhibits as well. Yeah, these are all individual exhibits. So from where I'm looking at the moment, the Georgia one, I haven't got confirmation. It doesn't have that blue stuff. I haven't seen it on any proper websites. Whereas this, if you have a look, is from a proper government, you know, it's actually been filed. So that's just something I, you know, I'm just telling you what I look for. The other thing that a lot of people have picked up on is that the Georgia case has a glaring typo, two glaring typos up in the top line here. Yeah, I mean, talk about foundations of writing. Miss Powell, District Court, Northern District of Georgia. Now, this also has led to competing theories as to what's going on. Some people have said, well, clearly this team is just working in a rush, right? They're working in such a pace that they are just missing like glaring typos. That's one explanation I've seen. Another explanation I've seen is that it's something to do with the way that Microsoft Word converts PDFs, which sounds dubious to me. Doesn't sound very convincing, but there we go. Another explanation is simply that these, like Sidney Powell and her team, are just literally just LARPers. They're incompetent, and this is just, you know, they're not taking this seriously. And there's even like a conspiracy on top of that, which is like they are deliberately trying to distract from the proper case, which is the one that Giuliani is doing. And that this is a kind of deep, like a deep, deep state conspiracy type thing. Again, pinch of salt with all of these. The final theory that I have seen doing the rounds is that this is a deliberate strategy, that these typos at the top here have been deliberately placed there so that all of the midwit journalists and the mainstream media and so on seize on the typo and therefore print stories saying, you know, ha ha, look at Sidney Powell, she can't even spell district right. And therefore CNN, Daily Mail, every newspaper, every outlet, every journalist ends up sharing the document, okay, saying, well, how serious can this possibly be, you know, look at the state of the typo. And usually I would dismiss this as cope. And bear in mind, when it comes to cope, I was one of the people who actually codified. I made one of the original cope. I don't make many memes, but one of the memes I did make was the five point definition of cope. I don't know if I still got that here. Let's see if I've still got that meme on my desktop somewhere. I probably deleted it now. Periodically delete all of my. Do I still have that? Let's have a look. I can't find it now. But long time viewers of the channel will remember I came up with a 5-point definition of cope and the 5 stages of cope that people typically go through. And this is not unique just to the left, it's anybody who is dealing with cope, right? And that, you know, there are various stages. The last stage of cope is to say, so the first stage of cope is just flat denial, okay? And then there are various different phases of it. And the last phase of cope is, yes, I acknowledge it happened, but we can't do anything about it now. You just have to accept it, okay? A good example will be something like, I don't know, population replacement. Okay, you know, the fifth one is, oh well, it's happened, and actually it's a good thing, and there's nothing we can do. Something I would look out for Democrat cope on this particular story is if we get to the stage of yes, there was fraud, but that's a good thing because Trump had to go. Look out for that. But also be aware of COPE on your own side, because I do not want to peddle COPE myself. But I do think there is something to this idea that a mistake this glaring and deliberate is actually a type of marketing strategy, especially as we've seen several other examples of this from Trump over the years. One of the examples that people have pointed to was the Giuliani hair dye, for example. Another example was the when Giuliani was in that kind of parking lot, right? You know, these are the sorts of trivial details that the media focus on, but by doing that, they end up amplifying and signal boosting Trump's team, because there are 10, 20 times more eyeballs on it than just the people who watch, you know, War Room Pandemic or this channel, or, you know, anybody in the kind of right wing ecosystem, if you want to put it that way. People were actually saying that Trump has actually been doing this for, you know, 4 or 5 years now, and that there are loads of it. Like, if you know that this is a deliberate strategy, he's actually been doing it for ages. Another example people were sending me was, do you remember when he had that aide who was sitting on the sofa in the White House and the media seized on that? And when you zoomed out from the picture, it was like the, you know, the Oval Office was just filled with all of these kind of people of color who had gone to visit Trump. So it was actually a kind of a cell phone, if you want to put it that way. As if to kind of prove the point, look, Daily Mail covered it, Bloomberg covered it, MSN Now covered it, Russia Today covered it. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that has happened. So there are four or five competing narratives on it. I'm just trying to see if I can find that picture that somebody sent me earlier on to show that, you know, Trump has done this over and over again. There was even a New York Times article saying that the strategic typos is something that Trump has been doing for ages, and they actually explain like how it all works. I'm just trying to find this. Those of the in the kind of trust the plan camp also have been talking about how misspellings always matter, that nothing is an accident. This was the famous one where, is that Kellyanne Conway? She was on her phone on the sofa. The media picked up on that. You zoom out, and that is what was happening. And it's like, well, more people got their eyeballs on this as a result of doing that. So, you know, I mean, you can make up your own minds. I'm actually reasonably convinced that there is something to this strategy of kind of planned incompetence, or because it gives something for a media who hates you to seize on, and then they end up covering something and self-owning. He actually does this with the fact-checking as well. Somebody was saying that he kept on going on about crime statistics, and then all the debunkers like set to work trying to kind of disprove him, and in the process ended up revealing the real statistic to everybody who read that as well. So it's kind of a clever little strategy if you believe it. Okay, that's enough preamble, I think. Let's get on to reviewing them. So I wanted to look at the Michigan one first, because of the fact that I am more convinced that the Michigan one is legit and has actually been filed versus the Georgia one. So here's the Michigan one. Notice district, a third misspelling of district right in the top line of this. Now, considering how important this is, I mean, one typo, a mistake, two typos, okay, three typos right there in the top line. I mean, you tell me what you think. So let's have a little read through this then. So nature of the, I won't read through it verbatim, but I will, you know, I'll read through it, and then I'll skip over anything that doesn't look very interesting. Okay. So I will do it like that. This civil action brings to light a massive election fraud, multiple violations of Michigan election code, in addition to the election and electors, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Set forth in the affidavits of dozens of eyewitnesses, the statistical anomalies and mathematical impossibilities detailed in the affidavits of expert witnesses. Okay. So it's another case that's built on top of affidavits. But I'm led to believe that this is, you know, standard in law. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. So I don't know, but I have been watching a lot of the legal YouTube channels. Who's the best one? The name of the one I watch a lot. You've probably been watching him too, and I no doubt he'll be doing his own version of this. But what's his name, that channel? Because I want to let you all know, if you don't watch him already, because he's been very good on this topic. It's called R&R Law, right? This guy. I'll just share my screen again. This guy, right? I've been watching him, and he's an actual lawyer. And you know, I'm led to believe from him that lots and lots of affidavits is kind of typical for legal cases. All right. So anyway, let's carry on. The scheme and artifice to defraud was for the purpose of illegally and fraudulently manipulating the vote count to manufacture an election of Joe Biden as president of the United States. The fraud was executed by many means, but the most fundamentally troubling, insidious, and egregious ploy, lovely use of one of my favorite words there, egregious. Mrs. AA hates the word egregious because I overuse it, was the systematic adaptation of old-fashioned ballot stuffing. It has now been amplified and rendered virtually invisible by computer software created and run by domestic and foreign actors for that very purpose. Now, note the foreign actors, because the foreign element is key. Remember, for that executive order that Trump signed in 2018, and for the act that Senator Johnson put through. So that's why I wanted to highlight those things right at the top. This complaint details an especially egregious range of conduct in Wayne County and the city of Detroit, though this conduct occurred throughout the state at the direction of Michigan state officials. The multifaceted schemes and artifices implemented by defendants and their collaborators to defraud resulted in the unlawful counting or manufacturing of hundreds of thousands of illegal, ineligible, duplicate, or purely fictitious ballots in the state of Michigan that constitute a multiple of Biden's supported lead in the state. While this complaint and the eyewitnesses and expert testimony incorporated therein identify with specificity sufficient ballots required to overturn or reverse the election results, the entire process is so riddled with fraud, illegality, and statistical impossibility that this court and Michigan's voters, courts, and legislators cannot rely on or certify any numbers resulting from this election. So basically, they're looking to get Michigan just thrown out entirely. It's not even like specific amounts of, they're looking to get the whole state thrown out, I think. Based on that third paragraph there. Again, I can only go on the words I'm reading and not on any legal knowledge, because I don't have any. I'm just trying to interpret this on the fly, as it were. But it seems to me that they're looking to just get Michigan, you know, chucked, like the whole state, can't certify it. And this would lend credence if you believe that Trump's strategy is actually just to stop Biden getting to 270, right? to stop the anybody getting to 270 by greying out these states, essentially, and then getting the state legislators to refuse to certify the election, refuse to send their electors in. And then in that, if you get to the deadline without the without all of the states certified and there's not 270, then apparently the Constitution says, well, then it's up to all of the House of Representatives to vote state by state, essentially. And then within each state, each county and each district has its own representative. And based on that, I believe Trump just wins easily, assuming that all of the Republicans just, you know, vote for Trump in that circumstance. So that means that the target audience of all of this may not necessarily be a judge. It may be the you know, the state legislators first, and then the congressman, the Republican congressman second, because they are ultimately the people who will be able to do this. That is a theory I've seen repeated quite a lot, not just by that R&R law chap, but by Robert Barnes, by the chap on the Duran, who's also a lawyer. I listen to him sometimes. He was talking about that. So, and if you watch the Pennsylvania stuff from yesterday, it seemed to be like Giuliani seems to be focusing like at least as much on those Republicans in key positions of power as he is on convincing any kind of judge or Supreme Court. So that's something to bear in mind with all of this, that there is a dual strategy. Certainly Giuliani has been part of that, but also it seems to me that, I mean, regardless of whether she's actually on the team or not on the team, it seems that Sidney Powell is doing something similar here. Anyway, voting systems, fraud and manipulation. 4, the fraud begins with the election software and hardware from Dominion voting systems used by Michigan Board of State Canvassers. The Dominion systems derive from the software designed by Smartmatic Corporation, which became Sequoia in the United States. Now, I'm sure you have as well spent a lot of time trying to fact check all of this, because when I first looked into it, it looked like Dominion and Smartmatic were not even two different companies, but rival companies, almost like saying Coca-Cola and Pepsi. And then this third company, this Sequoia, were involved as well. But I do seem to recall that they were involved in acquiring Smartmatic at some point. Okay. Also, if you go on places like WikiLeaks and so on, there's quite a lot of documentation around these two companies and how they've, you know, how it, this piece of property seems to change hands quite a bit. I will say, though, I also found a lawsuit when I was digging around in which I think Dominion and Smartmatic went to court against each other, and they were trying to sue each other for some reason back in 2009. So I will point that out. 5, Smartmatic and Dominion were found by foreign oligarchs and dictators to ensure computerized ballot stuffing and vote manipulation to whatever level was needed to make certain Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez never lost another election. And then there's a signed affidavit from a Dominion Venezuelan whistleblower. And I've got this open here. It has been redacted, but you can see that it does appear to be a statement from this Venezuelan whistleblower. Most of it is, or lots of it, large chunks of it are redacted out. But basically, there is a signed statement explaining what went on there. Okay. Let's carry on. As set forth in the Dominion whistleblower report, the Smartmatic software was contrived through a criminal conspiracy to manipulate Venezuelan elections in favor of dictator Hugo Chavez. Importantly, I was a direct witness to the creation and operation of an electronic voting system in a conspiracy between a company known as Smartmatic and the leaders of conspiracy with the Venezuelan government. This conspiracy specifically involved President Hugo Chavez Frias, the person in charge of the National Election Council named George Rodriguez, blah, blah, blah. So the basic claim here is that Smartmatic helped to rig elections for Hugo Chavez. Now, the question I'm still asking myself, as somebody who is trying to use this stream to help myself and to help all of you decide, is Sidney Powell the real deal or is she full of shit? Okay. Because I think a lot of people have been asking this question, and now is the moment really where we try to really make a call on, is this person leading us up the garden path? Because this this case, this Kraken, I would say is probably the most hyped legal case of all time. You know, they have hyped this to the moon. So what are we making of this? Like, what are we making of this so far? One of the things that I would say is that they're talking about Smartmatic, not Dominion. And again, it's like, well, they may have had some dealings, but they are actually two different companies. So so my rational brain, my skeptical brain, is saying Sidney Powell needs to do a better job of convincing me that when this whistleblower is talking about Smartmatic here, that also means Dominion. Like, that needs to be established, because at the moment it's very vague, you know, and this is just me looking at it as somebody who just understands a bit of logic, who can read English, right, with no legal training. This is my question. Okay. Says a core requirement of the Smartmatic software ultimately adopted by Dominion for the Michigan elections was the software's ability to hide its manipulation of votes from any audit, as the whistleblower explained. So that this whistleblower now is explaining how it was done in Venezuela using the Smartmatic software. Okay. But again, we still need to, this claim here that Dominion adopted the Smartmatic software for the Michigan elections, that needs to be proven. Because at the moment, that's just a claim, as far as I can see. So I'm hoping that the rest of this document will prove that beyond doubt. Because if I was the judge here, this would be something I would want to know about, right? Or if I was the, you know, if Michigan bought, like, whoever the defendants are of this, their lawyer will just say, well, Dominion is not Smartmatic, so what you want about? So that would be, that I think is a weakness so far in this case. I'll carry on going. The design and features of the Dominion software do not permit a simple audit to reveal its misallocation, redistribution, or deletion of votes. First, the system's central accumulator does not include a protected real-time audit log that maintains the date and timestamps of all the significant election events. Key components of the system utilize unprotected logs. Essentially, this allows an authorized user of the opportunity to arbitrarily add, modify, or remove log entries, causing the machine to log election events that do not reflect actual voting tabulations, more specifically, do not reflect the actual votes or the will of the people. See Exhibit 107, the Declaration of Harry Hearst. Okay, so this paragraph here basically shifts now from talking about the Smartmatic software that was used in Venezuela, which she is claiming the Dominion software is built on top of, right? This now shifts to talk about the Dominion software. So let's just have a look at what is this Exhibit 107, Declaration of Harry Hearst. Let's see if we can find that. Is that here? We'll just carry on. But basically, presumably, this is a statement, explaining how this machine works. Okay, we need not deal with the details there. Still need to prove that the Dominion and the Smartmatic are the same thing, because it's not proven to me. Number nine, indeed, under the professional standards within the industry in auditing and forensic analysis, when the log is unprotected and can be altered, it can no longer serve the purpose of an audit log. There is incontrovertible physical evidence that the standards of physical security of the voting machines and the software were breached, and machines were connected to the internet in violation of professional standards, which violates federal election law on the preservation of evidence. Okay. Number 10, in deciding to award Dominion $25 million 10-year contract to a Dominion project team led by Kelly Garrett, the former deputy director of the Michigan Democratic Party, and then certifying Dominion software, Michigan officials disregarded all of the concerns caused Dominion software to be rejected by the Texas Board of Elections in 2018 because it was deemed vulnerable to undetected and non-auditable manipulation. An industry expert, Dr. Andrew Epple, Princeton Professor of Computer Science and Election Security Expert, has recently observed with reference to Dominion voting machines, "I figured out how to make a slightly different computer program that just before the polls were closed, it switches some votes around from one candidate to another. I wrote that computer program into a memory chip, and now to hack a voting machine, you need just 7 minutes alone with it and a screwdriver." Okay, so this is attached as exhibit two. I mean, again, what would be better, wouldn't it, was this professor showing himself hacking the Dominion machine with this chip. Does this evidence show that? I don't know. I do think, though, that this is quite a substantive point. Why did Michigan award this contract to Dominion when the Texas board rejected it? That is a pretty good point. Good question to ask. And isn't it a bit strange how the Dominion project team lead, Kelly Garrett, was the former deputy director of the Michigan Democratic Party? Surely that is a conflict of interest, right? That is a conflict of interest there. So that, I would say, is the strongest point made so far, because that can't be denied. Those things, like, assuming that Kelly Garrett was both of those things, that would be a question mark for me. But I'm still not sure that the rest of it is, you know, that compelling so far, at least for me. Okay, let's carry on. Number 11, plaintiff's expert witness, Russell James Ramsfeld Jr., Ramsfeld affidavit, has concluded that Dominion alone is responsible for the injection or fabrication of 289,866 illegal votes in Michigan that must be disregarded. This is almost twice the number of Mr. Biden's purported lead in Michigan vote, without consideration of the additional illegal, ineligible, duplicate, or fictitious vote due to the unlawful conduct outlined here. And thus, by itself, is grounds to set aside the 2020 general election and grant the declaratory injunctive relief requested herein. So who is Russell? Who is Russell James Ramsfeld? Can we find his? So let's find that, because that seems like quite an important claim here. Is it this one? No. Is it this one? I can't find this Ramsfeld one. What's this? Just looking for the Ramsfeld affidavit. Okay, well, we're gonna have to find that in our own time. Yeah, but they're leaning on this expert witness. What I really want to know is, like, who is Russell James Ramsfeld? Why is he an expert and why should we care about his affidavit? I think it's probably quite important. So let's see if we can find it. Which exhibit was it? This one? No. This has been redacted. Sorry, folks, I just don't know which one of these it is. And I want to... Yeah, here we go, okay. Affidavit of Russell James Ramsfeld Jr. Okay, so this seems quite important from what they've... From this, it's the 11th point. He's an expert witness. Who is he? My name is Russell James Ramsfeld Jr., a resident of Dallas County, Texas, MBA from Harvard, political science degree from Duke, worked for NASA and MIT, among other organizations. I am part of the management team of Allied Security Operations. Okay. They analyzed logs. They've done studies. They've looked into Dominion. They have produced some data here. They've talked about Antrim County, Michigan. They have run stats on turnout. He said a statistical red flag observed in Michigan, where even a very limited remaining public data reveals 643 precincts voter turnout. They reckon in the city of North Muskegon, there's turnout of 781%. City of Detroit, 139%. So let's just do a little check, shall we, of the city of North Muskegon. Like, is that in Michigan? Let's just have a look. City of North Muskegon. Where's that then? It is in Michigan. Right. So let's have a look at turnout data. Let's see if we can find out any information about this. Okay, so this place exists. It seems to have an extraordinary turnout, according to this affidavit, 781%. Seems odd. Okay, so this is pretty interesting. Then he says the following data strongly suggests that the additive algorithm. He said otherwise votes would be solely represented as whole numbers. Votes cannot possibly be added up and have decimal plates reported. So he's saying that there are decimal points in the algorithm. How could that be? Basically, why are there decimal points there? And what's going on? Below is an excerpt from Dominion's direct feed into news outlets showing actual calculated votes with decimals. Huh. Why is that then? So he's saying the turnout is very, very high in some places in Michigan. There are decimal points in the timestamps from the Dominion software. And he's saying another red flag is the dramatic shift in votes between the two major party candidates as the tabulation of the turnout increased. So, you know, these are the big spikes that everybody's talked about after 2 a.m. And he's saying that if you have a look in the Dominion kind of functions, there's an override function to be able to save buckets for later and to manually override them. And he said the final red flag is perhaps the greatest. Something occurred in Michigan that is physically impossible, indicating the results were manipulated on election night within the EMS. The event, as reflected in the data, are the four spikes totaling 384,733 ballots, allegedly processed in a combined interval of 2 hours and 38 minutes. This is physically impossible given the equipment available at the four reference locations, precincts and townships. We looked at the ballots process and cross-referenced the serial numbers and the types of scanning devices used at each location to determine the amount of ballot processing capacity per the equipment performance specifications. The model DRM16011 processes 60 images a minute without accounting for paper jams, replacement cover sheets or loading times. So we calculate 2,000 ballots an hour per machine in field conditions, which is probably generous. This calculation yields a sum of 94,864 ballots as the maximum number of ballots that could be processed. It should be noted that in the event of a jam and the counter is not reset, the ballots cannot be run again, effectively duplicating them. This was noted in Ms. Karen's affidavit, a Dominion contract employee working in Detroit, which is attached. The existence of the spike is indicative of a manual adjustment. Okay, so this affidavit right here from Ramsfeld, I'm saying is looking pretty strong. I'm saying this is probably the strongest thing I've seen so far, because the stats don't lie, right? I mean, what's all of this then? And what's the, like, if you're on the Democrat side here, this is something that you need to explain. If the maximum capacity being generous with no paper jams and nothing going wrong is 94,000 an hour, how do you manage to get that then? How are they doing that many? He's saying it's physically impossible to count that many ballots in the time frame. So that's something that I would say should be pretty easy to prove or disprove one way or the other. And that's looking pretty compelling to me. Tell me if you disagree. I think that's the strongest bit of evidence that has been included in this so far. In fact, I'll just have a look to see what the chat is saying. Do people agree? Or I think that's a pretty strong. Press 1 if you think it's a really strong piece of evidence, and press 2 if you just think it's a nothing burger. Because I think that affidavit from Ramsfeld is pretty difficult to ignore. What's the explanation? How are they doing more? So, all right. So Golden Moose, a few twos. If you're pressing 2, explain to me what is the counter then? How would you counter that if you were a Michigan defense lawyer on the side of Michigan State? How are you going to explain away that? Because that is pretty strong piece of evidence. And I don't know. I want to know what the counter argument is. What's your counter argument to that? All right. I will carry on. Number 12. In addition to the Dominion computer fraud, one way you could do it, I was just thinking, right? If anybody's very good at maths, you could probably work out the per minute rate, work out how many minutes 2 hours and 38 is, and then times the per minute rate by that. Should I do it now? I could probably do it now myself. Let's think about this now. Okay, so 60 minutes in an hour, 120 minutes, right? Plus 38, so 120 plus 38 is 158 minutes we're looking for, okay? They can do 94,868 ballots in an hour. So you divide that by 60. So that's 1,581 ballots per minute, which you times by 158, gets you a total maximum of 249,816, according to this guy's numbers, which is well below 384. So his maths does check out. It's not you could pull a fast one there, but to me, just doing some back of the table calculations, it seems to check out. So let's carry on. In addition to the Dominion computer fraud, this complaint identifies several additional categories of traditional voting fraud and Michigan election code violations, supplemented by healthy doses of harassment, intimidation, discrimination, abuse, and even physical removal of Republican poll challengers to eliminate any semblance of transparency, objectivity, or fairness from the vote counting process. While this illegal conduct by election workers and state, county, and city employees in concert with Dominion, even if considered in isolation, the following three categories of systematic violations of the Michigan Election Code cast significant doubt on the results of the election and mandate this court to set aside the 2020 general election and grant declaratory and injunctive relief requested therein. So, I mean, Powell is trying to get Michigan thrown out, like fully thrown out. And there is now all of these affidavits saying, you know, we were bullied, we couldn't poll watch, etc., etc. Now, I don't really know why all of this stuff is included, because as far as I know, this is the Giuliani case, right? This is the stuff that they are already going for in many of the other cases. So I'll skip over this because I think we know all about it. This is like the old school bit of it, not the Dominion bit of it, which, you know, I think is, you know, strong enough on its own, but it's kind of there. I feel like we've seen a lot of this stuff before. Okay, now there are expert witness testimonies regarding voting fraud. So in addition to the fact witnesses, this complaint presents expert witness testimony demonstrating that several hundred thousand illegal, duplicate or purely fictitious votes must be thrown out. So we've got the Ramsfeld report, okay, who's saying that it's physically impossible to count that many. Now we've got a report by Dr. William Briggs showing there are approximately 60,000 absentee ballots listed as unreturned by voters that either never requested them or that requested and returned their ballot. So Dr. William Briggs, should we pull up that one? Let's have a look. William Briggs, that's Ronald Watkins. This is the Harry Hoosty one. Okay, let's try to find this Dr. Briggs. I don't know who this is. Doesn't seem to be. There's another one. That's Dr. Nia. Okay. I can't find Mr. Briggs unless it's one of the first ones. Eric Quinnell. Is this Dr. Briggs? Nope. No, that's Toma. Sorry about this, folks. There are so many of these, but I do think it's important to try to just double check to see, like, you know, is this Mickey Mouse stuff or is it real stuff? That's the contract. Still not Dr. Briggs. We're getting to tab overload here. That's another affidavit from someone else. Another affidavit doesn't seem to be okay. I can't find it. We may have to skip over Dr. Briggs because I can't find him. Is this Dr. Briggs? No, doesn't seem it. Surprised my browser's not going to crash in a minute. No, this is a academic paper. All right. I can't find Dr. Briggs, sadly. That's the Venezuelan chap. All right, let's carry on. Let's carry on. Okay. So anyway, the Dr. Briggs reckons 60,000 absentee ballots were unreturned. And then there's a report from Dr. Eric Quinnell analyzing anomalous turnout figures in Wayne and Oakland counties, showing that Biden gained nearly 100%, or frequently more than 100%, of all new voters in certain townships, precincts over 2016, and thus indicated that nearly 87,000 anomalous and likely fraudulent votes from these precincts. So we did find Eric, didn't we? I noticed that one. Here's Eric Quinnell, over 18. You know, he's got a bachelor's, he's got a BA in engineering, master's, he's doctorate in computer arithmetic. So he's a PhD, basically a, you know, computer science PhD, this guy. He's got, you know, quite a lot big background in this. He said he was asked to analyze the results of the 2020 election in Wayne and Oakland to determine if there were any statistical anomalies. And he says, when compared with the 2016 general election, the Democrat to voting ratio and voting distribution gains for 2020 were well outside the 2016 of a multiple of 1.24 for Wayne County, outside Detroit, and 1.19 for Oakland County. Specifically, for every one additional voter for Trump over the full total, there were 2.32 additional voters for Biden. So that's quite high. He says, at a county or district level analysis, statistical anomalies appear in even greater ratios. For example, in the township of Livonia, Wayne County, which was a majority Republican county in 2016, Biden gained 3.2 new voters for every one new Trump voter. Biden also achieved 97% of all additional new votes above the 2016 general election vote total in Lavinia, as well as 151% more new votes than all total new registrations in the township, which is a significant mathematical curiosity. So it does seem, zeroing in on Wayne County and Lavinia, something extremely suspect is going on, if these figures are to be believed. Such local mathematical anomalies are not seen in all townships of both Wayne and Oakland, but only a select few. So it's specific townships in these specific counties. I constructed a mathematical model that subtracted out local statistical anomalies and renormalized them according to their 2016 ratios, all while keeping pace with the additional turnout for Trump as a control. This allowed me to quantize a predicted number of anomalous votes per county. And so there he's talking through his methodology. And yeah, I mean, it seems that there is odd amounts of new votes for Biden in specifically those townships. Okay. And we can see that one of the strange things is that the Democrats have got more votes basically than new registered Democrats, which is kind of interesting. Okay, let's keep on going then with this. So where are we? That was Eric Quinnell. And then 17, as explained. Now, for me, the Eric Quinnell analysis was not quite as compelling as the Ramsfell one, simply because you've always got the claim that can come from, you know, Democrats. And, well, yeah, Donald Trump's really disliked, and it was specifically those communities who really dislike him. So you could always, like, you know, say, well, yeah, it's a bit, it's mathematically and statistically weird, but people really turned out in this election because they really hate Trump, right? That would probably be the counter to that, although the very high, more than 100% of new voters is something that would need to be explained. Okay. 17, as explained and demonstrated in the accompanying redacted declaration of former electronic intelligence analysis under the 305th Military Intelligence with experience gathering SAM missile system electronic intelligence, The Dominion software was accessed by agents acting on behalf of China and Iran in order to monitor and manipulate elections, including the most recent US general elections in 2020. This declaration further copies includes a copy of patent records for Dominion Systems in which Eric Coomer is listed as the first of the investors of Dominion Voting Systems, and that is attached. Expert Navid Kesharivnia explains that U.S. intelligence services had developed tools to infiltrate foreign voting systems, including Dominion. He states that Dominion software is vulnerable to data manipulation by unauthorized means and permitted election data to be altered in all battleground states. He concludes that hundreds of thousands of votes cast for President Trump in the 2020 general election that were transferred to former Vice President Biden. So let's just have a little look at the NIA one. We spotted that one, didn't we? Let's find the NIA. Okay, so Navid Kesharivnia, 59 years old. He comes from California. He's another computer science PhD. He's got a background. He's worked for the CIA, blah, blah, blah. He's employed by a large defense contractor. He's the chief cybersecurity engineer, etc. So he's qualified. He's talking about certain tools that were mentioned by WikiLeaks, independently confirmed by this lieutenant general who's retired. So they're talking about all of this sort of stuff. And he's basically just saying like what his background is and what his career was. And then he says it was founded in Toronto. He's saying he's quoting a New York Times article. So he's talking about USB memory cards being used, which is another really odd thing that's been going on. They keep on finding these USB sticks. Mentioning that Elizabeth Warren had problems with Dominion. He says, I have not been granted to examine any of the systems used in the 2020. However, he has conducted analysis of the New York Times data sets and discovered significant anomalies caused by fraudulent manipulation of the results. In my expert judgment, the evidence is widespread and throughout all battleground states I have studied. I conclude the following. The vote count distribution in these states are not based on normal system operation. Instead, they are caused by fraudulent electronic manipulation of targeted voter machines. So he's basically saying that, you know, based on the New York Times data that he's been using, there are some very odd things going on. And he's saying that there are Chinese parts, there are supply chains of foreign ownership involved in it. Some of these other countries have been involved. They're open to various different cyber attacks. He's saying that basically the results produced by these systems have not produced auditable results. And it's evident the battles were not properly validated, records were not kept, system experience. So basically there's something very dodgy about the suite of tools used here, and that the system is exploitable, basically, especially with the use of these USB memory cards, backdoor systems, etc., etc. So it's all quite technical, but, you know, he's sworn under penalty of perjury that what he's saying is true. So take that as you will. All right. Let's get back to the quote-unquote Kraken. So they say these and other irregularities provide this court grounds to set aside the results of the 2020 election, blah, blah, blah. And then it's going on to the jurisdiction advenue. Says this court has subject matter which provides the district court shall have original due restriction. Then they're going on to quote various laws. I mean, this does seem to be some formatting error here. I mean, this is just gobbledygook, this bit here. It says the court has jurisdiction over the related constitutional claims, blah, blah, blah. Because the United States Constitution reserves for state legislatures the power to set time, place, manner, and holding elections for Congress and the President, state executive officers, including but not limited to Secretary Benson, have no authority to unilaterally exercise that power, much less flout existing legislation. So this is similar now, as my understanding, to the Lynn Wood case. They're just bunging it all in, basically. This is like four or five different cases in one. They're basically saying that they changed the rules when they didn't have the right to, according to the Constitution and the laws, etc. And then they're talking about who the people are, who the plaintiffs are, who the defendants are. So we don't need to. I'm interested to know, like, who are the other they're registered voters. They're just normal people, basically, and electors as well. And then the defendants are Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, who is the Secretary of State for Michigan. They are the defendants in the case, and the Michigan Board of State Canvassers. They are a defendant in the case as well. So they're basically suing the state of Michigan for a fraudulent election. So these are the statements of facts. Plaintiffs bring this action under 42 USC, under MC. So under these particular acts, they're bringing the action to remedy deprivations of rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and laws of the United States, to contest the election results and the colliery under Michigan Constitution. So these are some pretty big claims that have been made here, which have an impact above and beyond Michigan, I would say. And I would say that there was some pretty serious stuff in there mixed in with some other things that I am less confident of. I still am not seeing this link between Dominion and Smartmatic that they keep on claiming. I just don't see that proven. But the statistical stuff and the physical evidence, I think, is pretty strong. That's my thought of the Kraken. Now, this keep on going and going, but presumably at the end there will be like, what do they want to happen here? Talking about the canvassing process, I mean, this just really does go on and on and on. Now this stuff down here does look like formatting troubles, doesn't it? I mean, these aren't even words here. So there's obviously some formatting errors in the document. They're talking about the Republicans denied access. They're talking about the whole process, the harassment. Okay, so essentially it's a lot of stuff that we've heard before, but now they've got sworn statements attesting to this and that with some pretty hard mathematical and statistical questions that I think are pretty difficult to answer if you're on the defense's team. Like, what's their defense against any of this stuff? So having been through, I mean, this keeps on going and going and going. I mean, they're going through all of the bits of evidence one by one here, all in one document. But presumably there's a bit right at the end where they say what they want to happen. What do they want to happen? So this is what they're actually asking for right at the end. The plaintiffs asked this court to enter a judgment in their favor and provide the following emergency relief. So this is what they're actually asking for, based on all of this reams of evidence and affidavits and irregularities, statistical and process irregularities as well. They're asking for an order directing Secretary Benson, Governor Whitmer, and the Board State Canvassers and Wayne County to decertify the election results. So they want the election results decertified. Number two, an order enjoining Secretary Benson and Governor Whitmer for transmitting the currently certified election results to the Electoral College. So that's basically saying they can't certify again. Three, an order requiring Governor Whitmer to transmit certified election results and state that President Donald Trump is the winner of the election. So basically they want the governor to say actually Trump won the election, not Biden. Four, that's pretty big ask there, I would say. Four, an immediate order to impound all the voting machines and software in Michigan for inspection by the plaintiffs. So this is like, well, we want to have a look at those voting machines. Let our experts, let all of these PhDs in engineering and so on, in cybersecurity, have a look at those voting machines to see what they can find. Number five, an order that no votes received or tabulated by machines that were not certified as required by federal and state law be counted. Six, a declarative judgment declaring that Michigan's failed system of signature verification violates the Electors and Elections Clause by working a de facto abolition of the signature verification requirement. Case similar to the Giuliani case, right? The sixth one. Seven, a declarative judgment declaring that the current certified election results violates the Due Process Clause in the US Constitution Amendment 14. Eight, a declarative judgment declaring that mail-in and absentee ballot fraud must be remedied with a full manual recount or statistically valid sampling that properly verifies the signatures on absentee ballot envelopes and that invalidates the certified results if the recount or sampling analysis show a sufficient number of ineligible absentees. So they want a proper audit, hand recount, and a full audit with signature check. So similar to what we've seen in other states. Number nine, an emergency declarative judgment that voting machines be seized and impounded immediately for forensic audit by the plaintiff's experts. So they want their own experts to be able to have a look at these voting machines. Number 10, declarative judgment declaring absentee ballot fraud occurred in violation of the constitutional rights, election laws, and the state law. Number 11, permanent injunction prohibiting the governor and secretary of state from transmitting the currently certified results to the Electoral College based on the overwhelming evidence of election tampering. 12, immediate production of 24-hour security camera recording all rooms used in the voting process at the TCF Center for those two nights, November 3rd and November the 4th. So they want the camera footage. 13, plaintiffs further request the court grant such other relief as is just and proper, including but not limited to the costs of this action and their reasonable attorney fees and expenses. So not only that, they want their fees back as well. So there it is, put in by Sidney Powell and these various other people. There we go. So now I've gone through the Michigan version of the Kraken. I didn't go through every single page because I think there was a lot of repeated material in different ways, but I think we got through the meat of it. Out of 10, how compelling do you think it is? 10 out of 10 being very compelling, 0 out of 10 being a nothing burger. Let's see what you all think. And then I will have a look at some super chats. So I'm seeing 10s, 9s, 8s, 10, 6.5, 7.5, a lot of 7s. Not seeing many 1s. There's a 2 there. 5 out of 10 needs more Kraken. A lot of 8. So I would say if I was to average all of the votes, we're coming in about 7.5. About a 7.5, I would say. About a 7.5, I think. If I was to average all of the comments. Okay. So people think there is some compelling evidence there. Going to have a look at super chats. Also have a little look to see if anybody has been buying Foundations of Economics. I think they've all gone. Yeah, all of the Foundations of Economics have have gone yet again. So if you're interested in getting the special discount rate, your last chance, folks, will be tomorrow night on the cigar stream. That'll be your last chance to get the Black Friday deal. Okay, so let's have a look at the super chats then, folks. So Coney says, time to milk the lol cow that is Martin Gardner. This was this hilarious guy on Twitter that we found replying to Andrew Neil tweets. And he is one of the most ridiculous people. He was trying to say that Donald Trump is the most unpopular man in American history. And I said, no, he's not. 10 million more people voted for him. Don't talk rubbish. And he was saying, you know, oh, you'd have been the sort of person who stuck up for Hitler. And I said, well, the thing is, Hitler wasn't unpopular in the 30s Germany either. Loads of people voted for him as well. And he was like, what? So you're pro-Hitler now? So this was, this basically was, you know, a funny individual that lots of people had a little play with on Twitter last night. Q, I think he ended up blocking everyone, that guy, but he is indicative of the sort of person who now follows Andrew Neil. Q Kuthalin says, just never forget the most secure election in history. Yeah, I know. Never forget all of this stuff that we're looking at. Silly Sailor for 20 English pounds says, let us assume that the Kraken is accurate. Wouldn't it still be easier to fight on the signatures, lack of observers, etc.? Win that battle quicker as time is an issue. Make sure Trump is the president and then take on the Kraken. Yeah, one of the things I thought was really one of the things that I thought was very, very strange about this is that they stuck all of that stuff in as well. And I think the case would have been stronger if they didn't just go for like everything. It's like they chucked in the signature stuff. They chucked in they put everything there. I would have thought it would have been more laser focused if they just focus on Kraken in this case and let Giuliani and his team focus on the other stuff. But they seem like they've thrown everything into this. First Last says, will you compete the Trivium and do Foundations of Logic and Foundations of Rhetoric at some point too? I think Foundations of Logic or Foundations of Argumentation is a very strong possibility, because that again is something that nobody has ever taught. And you know, I think logic is another very strong thing that people aren't taught, that should be taught. So I think people would buy that. Foundations of Rhetoric, I mean, rhetoric is a bit of a darker art, First Last. So I'll consider that, but it's a little bit, I mean, that's like teaching black magic or something, isn't it? Rhetoric. It's they're all foul moves, but I'll consider it. I will consider it. President-elect Stephen Jay has just given me a pound. Federal Reserve has committed treason. Welcome back, sir. Long time no see. He says, been busy with work and school. Hang the bankers. thank you very much. Random username says, watch Viva Fry and Robert Barnes for law information. Great channel. Both are lawyers. Barnes is a famous civil rights lawyer. Yeah, I do watch Viva Fry and Robert Barnes. Very good. Lord Abine says, happy Thanksgiving from the USA, AA. Today, I am thankful for your content, including the amazing Foundations of Economics. Well, thank you very much. It's still available, although for the next 24 hours, it will be full price until we get to Cigar Stream, in which case the Black Friday deal will be live again, and then probably it won't go on sale, you know, for until like next Black Friday or something like that. So those people who are pouncing, they're getting pretty good deals in the short term. But I won't rule out, once I get more courses on, there could be like bundles and things down the line as well. So for those people who you know, for those people who struggle with the full price, you know, look out for the deals when they're available. Christian Chad says, I agree with Cotto's take. The Georgia case is too complex and technical for most judges. They despise tech and maths. PA has more electoral college votes, and the case is far simpler constitutional violation. Yeah, I mean, I do agree that the complexity and stuff is you know, a barrier, but I think that there's some very compelling stuff in the Kraken. The physical voting one, that's not that difficult for anybody to get their head around. These machines can only count this many votes in this amount of time, and you're claiming that they, you know, the state is claiming that they did 380 odd in 2 hours and 38 minutes, which is impossible. You don't need a PhD in maths to understand that. Christian Chad also says Nescafe Gold is life. And I noticed that he gave me $17.76, which is very good. South Texas Death for $20. It says AA getting white-pilled. She is my dude. Yep, well, hold the, I still say hold the line, because regardless of which way they do it, the truth is the truth. And the future of America rests on not allowing the Shadow King to get away with the steal. And Leo Marcantitio says, a search of private companies should not be running our electors, law professor says. There's a story citing Smartmatic becoming Dominion. So there we go. That would be the final piece of the jigsaw. But was that included in the Kraken? Because I didn't see it myself. Yitrimiz says, you get £1 for every hint of plausible evidence, and he's given me £2. So he thinks there are two bits of plausible evidence. And remember, Yitrimiz is like he's a full-on pro-Biden Democrat in my comments. And, you know, at least he thinks there are two good bits of evidence there. So that's progress. Chris Lutio says, I really appreciate your election analysis, AA. You have the best analysis while still being entertaining. You've been my go-to source for this. Well, thank you very much, Chris Lutio. I've been trying my best. I mean, I think this is of historical importance, which is why I've been giving it so much attention. Red Hammerhead says, watching at the beginning, as a complex litigation trial attorney, I would be shocked to see mistakes like Powell's at her level in federal court, no less. Yeah, I mean, the spelling errors are... I mean, I went over that. One of the things I'll be interested in is that when those official files are put in, will those typos be fixed, especially in the Georgia case? Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, the best thing about this lawsuit is that it grants the Democrats a fall guy, Dominion. Very merciful of the Emperor to grant it. Dems get an out. Well, do they, though? Because I think the state officials who basically signed the contract knowing there were problems with Dominion software, to me, I thought that was another really strong bit of this case. I mean, again, I'm not Sidney Powell and I am not a lawyer. I would have wanted to try to like pare the case down to like three or four laser strong points and just hammer them with that. Whereas it seems like this has been like a whole laundry, like this is like everything in the kitchen sink all in one lawsuit. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's stronger, doing it that way or having like more targeted specific cases with one or two points. I think that would have been, like, to me, that would have been strong, but... Again, I don't know. I don't know legal strategy. I've never been in a courtroom. Prince of Parma says, religious conference two, when? Well, I mean, when things calm down a little bit, I can start doing things like the Christian Council part two. One of the things I want to do at some point is there's this channel called Voice of Wales, who I want to do a set of special shows on the state of Wales, the state of Ireland, the state of Scotland, and the state of England. Just have a little whip round to see to see the state of play in all four of those places with special guests. I wouldn't even be against asking Keith Woods to come on and talk about Ireland, or Voice of Wales to come on and talk about Wales. That's something of interest. To me, once everything's died down with the election, you know, I'm talking like maybe like January, February next year. That's a set of special shows I want to do. Maybe I'll devote Cigar Stream to it for a month or something like that. Jedi Anakin Cringewalker says, I have joked with Charlemagne that an alliance between the Supreme Court and executive constitutes a functional monarchy in all but name only. Yeah, that's true. And it's pretty awesome. In fact, some of the people I've been most impressed with over this whole story have been the founding fathers and the framers of the Constitution. Those guys were geniuses in the way that they have, basically smoked the Democrats like kippers with their attempts to steal this election. They really have. And this is what this comes down to. If the Democrats get away with it, the US Constitution might as well be toilet paper. That's basically what this whole deal is about. It's about that and that only. Okay. Does the USA, as we know it, have a future, or is it going to be some new thing? Okay. A new one to come in from Frank Castle says, check out Jeffrey Prather on YouTube. He's an ex-military intelligence guy, and he's a very interesting guy. So, Jeffrey Prather, I'll check him out. Now, I don't know about looking through the Georgia version of the Kraken, but my understanding is that the Georgia case is really similar. So let's just have a very quick flick through to see if there's anything different in there. Okay. So this is the one with CJ Pearson as one of the plaintiffs. Similar, it's against Brian Kemp, who's the governor, and Brad Raffensperger, who's the Secretary of State, and various other kind of state minions. And looking at it, is it the same, basically? Is it the same affidavit? Is it the same? It looks broadly the same case as far as I can see. Smartmatic, Sequoia, affidavit with the Venezuelan guy. It's the same case. Look, it's just the same case again. So the Kraken is essentially the same case in different, they're putting the same case into different states, as far as we can see. All right, so that's the long and the short of it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad that you're able to join me. Hunter says that the case has merit. I read every bloody page of it. I recommend you do the same with the Georgia case. He says the Michigan case is constitutional, but the Georgia case is better. Okay. Matthew Lawrence says, hi, AA. I just started listening. And at the beginning, happy Thanksgiving from the States. And okay, so what is in the Georgia case, folks, that is not in the... Okay, maybe I've given the Georgia case short shrift here. Let me find it. I'll get the Georgia case back up before I was about to wrap this up. Somebody says, do a stream on subversion in music videos. Pearl Jam's Evolution is a great example. I was going to do a whole stream once on videos by The Residents, who are a very subversive band who pioneered the video form. Okay, so what am I looking for here? Tell me, people in the chat, what am I looking for? Yeah, some people can hear AAA is with Mrs. A in the other room and is going through a phase of shouting in this manner, which we're currently working through. So if you can, usually AAA goes to a class at this time, like some like music thing or gym thing that they go to together. But since the lockdown, that has been cancelled. So they're currently just in the other room. So that's why you can hear them. Of course, with the other streams, AAA will be in bed. but it's the middle of the day. So What am I looking at here in the Georgia version of this? Kemp and Raffensperger discarded all concerns the Dominion software be rejected. Texas. I mean, this is the same. I can see it's the same case. It's literally the same experts, the same affidavits. What's the difference, folks? I don't see any difference. Georgia law is being cited. I don't see any. Unless somebody can tell me what the difference is, it looks like exactly the same. It's like even the same words. So, yeah. Looks like the same case. Somebody's saying that the Georgia case is different because there are Democrats involved. So Republicans involved as well as Democrats. Indeed. Thank you very much, everyone. The stream did what it promised. I didn't give my own rating. I thought that the chat gave basically kind of an average rating of about 7.5 on the Kraken. My view is that there's some extremely compelling stuff in there, very difficult to deny, very difficult to defend against, which would be 10 out of 10 points. But I am worried about the seemingly amateur typos and things like that, which everybody has commented on. I'm also worried about the lack of overall focus, because it seems to pursue about 5 or 6 different cases all in one. And I would have preferred it to just stick on the Dominion, or just stick on like one thing. I don't know why they bunged in all the other stuff at the same time. So, yeah, if you like, click like and subscribe. And somebody's saying I'm watching too many Q people. Let's be more realistic. What Q people am I watching? I'm not watching any Q people at all. I don't know any Q. I'm not even in that orbit. Unless like reading Sidney Powell's legal case is that. I don't think it's unrealistic to look at the actual things that Trump has done, actual executive orders, actual acts that have been put into law by the Senate, actual people who have been removed and replaced in their jobs. Those things aren't fake; they're real. So I do think that you have to pay attention to those. I don't really know why people are talking about Q. Didn't really know that. Deplorable Patriarch says, PolitiFacts say that the Ramsfeld data relates by mistake to Minnesota, not Michigan data. But that's not true. I double checked it. I specifically looked at that. And I think you'll find that that was maybe an earlier version of that statement, because all of the townships that were listed there, I checked them live on the stream. They were from Michigan, not from Minnesota. So, yeah, I reject that. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Now get out.